Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, wonderful Hoovering listeners. I hope you're well. We've got an absolute belter of an episode for you this week. I'm talking to writer, scientist, presenter, BAFTA-winning presenter, Maddie Mote, who at the moment is about to bring a book out. I think maybe it came out yesterday. I think it came out yesterday, called Stuff. And she's kind of on fire all about sustainability. So we got into sustainability. It's hard to say, isn't it? It's a lot of sir noises. We got into sustainability in regards to eating quite deep. But it was never not the most fun and funny conversation ever. I think we're really going to have a lovely time because I had a really bloody lovely time meeting Maddie. Thank you for listening to Hoovering. Tell other people about it, please. Just shout, I listen to this podcast called Hoovering, like that. Or you could email them or WhatsApp them or give it a 5-star review and then maybe a stranger will read that and then listen to it or subscribe to it. And those are the main ways. Thank you. I'd love you to come see me do some live comedy. I'm doing new material every single Monday throughout what's left of October and November at the Camden Head in Camden, otherwise known as the Camden Comedy Club. And I'm joined by some of my funniest friends, from Susie Ruffle coming up this Monday, Jen Brister, Sarah Pascoe, Desiree Birch, fucking amazing comedians basically joining me, and it's only £6 because we're all doing new stuff. So come along to one of those, would you? Details are, as ever, on my website. Before we get into it, just quickly say thank you for supporting the podcast. Thank you for listening. That's the main thing I want you to do. If it turns out you've actually got spare money as well, you can support me on Patreon. I'd love that. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see stuff like exclusive content, things like that, that I will wang you in exchange for things of yours, like £2 a month. I'm going to get into it. Maddie isn't based in London, so we recorded this over the Zooms, and we met for, I mean, she explains the brief, but we sort of roughly said, let's have a sort of sustainable breakfast. And I wondered whether we'd have a kind of earnest worthiness off. And in joyful news, as you'll hear, it absolutely does not go down that route at all. And I need to apologise in advance. As you can hear, I'm a bit bunged up. Sorry about that. No, there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm just sorry I had quite a crunchy breakfast. But Maddie was more thoughtful than me, and you can't hear her breakfast at all. She had a soft and sustainable breakfast, and I had a crunchy and only borderline sustainable breakfast. Anyway, enjoy. We really did. I'm sure you're going to.
Thank you for joining me for brekkie. What have you got for brekkie?
So I heard my instructions.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a sustainable breakfast.
Oh, no. I mean, that is a vague brief, isn't it?
But I think I've smashed it. Basically, we had some leftover oats, and I mean, they were dregs. So last oats in the bag.
The ones that have gone all small and dusty.
Oh, it's dust. It's just dust. Yeah,
it's just oatmeal. Yeah.
Just a paste. Just a lovely.
And then we have an overgrowing blackberry bramble bush in our garden. So Great. We were just taking so many blackberries off it all summer, and we had nothing to do with them. So we just put them all in the freezer.
Great.
So I've gone and put some blackberries in the porridge, harvested from the garden.
Yes.
And we went to the most adorable apple day with my partner's parents at the weekend. So we got some local apples. So I put some apples in it as well.
Apple day.
I know. I feel like that. I haven't had a breakfast this gourmet in a while. So
it's always the way it works out, isn't it? Well, I'm very impressed.
What are you eating?
We've moved into a new home that's a doer-upper, and the garden was like a jungle of brambles as well.
Really?
And it's literally the most wholesome thing I've ever done. It's got in there with gloves on with my kid and picked the blackberries off and made jam.
Jam.
And labelled it. Rudy's jam. Yeah. One jar for us, one jar for Nana.
Did you put a square of cotton on the top?
No, I'm not that.
Didn't go that far.
I couldn't go full Oliver Bonus on the wholesomeness of having made jam. It's honestly felt like the most smug, ethical thing I'd ever achieved. Not just in terms of sustainable eating, but as a parent.
I thought I lucked out. I put the blackberries in the freezer rather haphazardly, and they accidentally fell into the ice cube tray. And then the ice cube tray, suddenly, I had ice cubes with blackberries in. And I thought, well, that was a happy accident.
I can't recommend that enough.
It's great.
Oh, yum. Lots of people talk about freezing a grape and sticking that in their cold drink, but I love the idea because blackberry and gin is a nice move, I think.
Yeah,
because I like slow gin, and people make blackberry gin on purpose, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So I had aspirations of being even more sustainable than I've been, in the sense that I had a fridge full of nowhere near a portion of leftovers, but of mainses. So I was going to be really brave. I was going to be a big, brave soldier and have like a little bit of like Korean mince, like corn mince, but with all weird carrots and some kind of tamarind in it and stuff.
Yeah.
And then like a dollop of... And anyway, when I was in a testament to her, but when I was putting my son to bed last night, my missus mind swept the whole fridge and turned it into a dinner, and I was like, oh, thank you. And she was like, I thought you'd love this. This is exactly the sort of thing you'd normally be so chuffed about. And I was like, it's fine, I was planning to have it as a horrible breakfast, and actually you saved me from having to make any kind of sacrifice. So instead I've got I got like huge bunches of kale in my veg box, so they were yellowing, so I've roasted them with some tomatoes that were the end of days. I've just used stuff. I've used up, but it is quite breakfasty, I think.
You know,
kale,
what?
Tomatoes, eggs, and some crusty old sourdough that's still nice if you toast it.
That sounds amazing. I love a savoury breakfast. I think, you know, breakfast can be really boring when we do it at home, which is why maybe we get so excited about the idea of brunch, because basically brunch is just better breakfast.
Yeah.
So I feel like we need to all up our breakfast game.
Totally.
It doesn't need to just be cereal.
No, I'm a giant advocate of the savoury breakfast.
Yeah, why not add some
crunchy
kale in?
But you've made porridge sound, honestly, as exciting as porridge has sounded to me for a long, long time.
Well, there you go. Well, we've both done well then.
Well done. Cheers. Backpack. Quick little backpack. Stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much do you care about eating generally?
A lot. I care a lot about eating.
I really enjoyed how you said that. Lovely.
Yeah, I'm really into food. One of my favourite things is to go out and eat different types of food, different cuisines. I like everything about eating.
It's exciting, isn't it? It's really exciting.
I do.
So you've got this snazzy book coming out called eco stuff. Stories. Yeah, stuff. Eco yeah. stories of everyday stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's got loads of, like, there's loads of angles on eating in it. It's also, it's a more general, really, it seems like a really practical, hopeful, like, ways in which we can genuinely in day-to-day life be more, waste less and be more sustainable. Is that about right?
Yeah, I'd say so. So the book is, it's a collection of stories from all around the world. And each story is about the way something is made. And because that's sort of like something I've done on telly for a long time, we're making children's programmes. But actually the stories that I get really excited about are, you know, they're often global tales. They're about communities who are just making things in ways that you would never expect. And often they're really creative and they just make sense. And in being a bit more creative, that, you know, they just, they happen to be more sustainable as well. So that's
amazing.
That's the premise of the book, but lots of the stories are about food and are about plants. And in telling stories about the way certain things are made, I guess we can draw out sort of ideas as to how we can bring sustainability into our own lives as well. So one of the stories, for example, is set in Kolkata in India, where still the chaiwallahs, the tea makers, they still use clay cups. And the idea is that potters in the city, they make thousands and thousands of these clay cups every single morning. And these are then used by a lot of the chaiwallahs still to, you know, serve tea in. But the great thing about these clay cups is that, you know, because they've come from the clay from the local river, they can just be crushed up and thrown on the ground and they just wash back into the river from where they came.
Wow. And then be made again, potentially. There might be cups that have that are on their 10th life as a cup.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. So, like the most kind of effortless version of a renewable.
Yeah. And it was a great story for me, especially for kids, because it sort of teaches the, you know, it teaches some a child or the reader about the journey of stuff and actually how, you know, a lot of our things have a beginning, middle and an end. But actually the ideal situation is just to keep things going round in a little loop. And that's what you've got with these cups, this river clay. It's just going round and round, being useful. And then, just keeps becoming a cup and going back to the river again. But what's lovely about it, you've also got this story of delicious, warm, cozy chai tea. And so you learn a little bit about the culture in the place as well. So that was one of the stories I fell in love with and have been drinking chai tea ever since.
I love it. Out of a clay cup that I hope you don't get out of the Thames. Yeah.
Doesn't look quite the same, is it?
No, it wouldn't. Yeah, it'd probably have a few Pampers wipes in it, wouldn't it? It'd be a bit heartbreaking out of the bottom of the Thames. Delicious. That's so interesting. I love it. And I love talking to people. I'm on this podcast, I talk to so many comedians because they're who I have the easiest access to. And I find myself, I'm often able to talk to people from the world of food as well. And I suppose those two are the main ones, sometimes sport more recently. But I love it when I get a chance to talk to someone like you who, I don't know, has another angle on eating, really. And I think in terms of like food waste and sustainability, it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing in lots of people's consciousness. There's more telly about it than ever before. There's really accessible telly about it than compared to, you know, it's less earnest. It's more kind of like there's lots of stuff now that everyone's seen that show where they go into people's homes and go, you're throwing all this away. They're doing it with celebrities now, aren't they? And going, look, all this stuff you throw away. And it's so interesting in terms of all of that stuff. You can become as aware as anything, but it doesn't necessarily affect behaviour or change behaviour. So, I mean, actually, like a practical guide as to some ways to do that is so so useful. And especially sort of starting with kids who I think, you know, my son's just turned six. And it's like, I do think it's going to be a generation that are so hyper aware. We've sort of had to, I don't know, I'm older than you, I'm sure. But my generation has sort of had to educate our parents. My parents were have you ever seen that episode of Mad Men where they have a picnic and then they leave all the stuff there?
Oh,
they just leave all their litter there. And it's like, it's nothing said about it, but it's like the most affecting scene ever. Yeah.
How smart of the directors to do that. Because it just was at a time where we just did not know what we were doing, because nobody was thinking far enough into the future when it came to that sort of thing. Yeah, it is difficult when it... the whole reason, I guess, sort of like why I approach things from this, how is it made?
angle is because actually it gives me an opportunity for everything to be positive. Every story is exciting because you're always creating a product at the end. And most of these, most of the stuff in the book are really ordinary everyday objects. And they suddenly become exciting when you discover the cool story about how it was made. So, you know, the cup is, you know, quite a fun example of that.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's one of the ways to get through to kids is through stories, through the power of story and by sharing positive messages, because I think we want to enact on positivity a little bit more. I was chatting to some kids actually about those cups just a couple of days ago and they were all so excited to show me their reusable bottles and their own reusable cups. And I was like, well, that's great. You know, if now they've got another story from another part of the world that helps to sort of like reinforce that idea, then that's great. I never said, hey, you will need to be using reusable cups. They just did it because, and then they became excited too. So that was nice.
That's very
in terms
cool.
of food generally and being more careful about what we eat. I think it is confusing because there are so many things we're trying to tackle at once.
You've got
the problem of, you know, do we need to be cutting back on meat? Do we need to not be eating meat entirely? And then you've got the whole, the packaging situation. Should actually we just be buying food which has as little packaging as possible?
Yeah.
And then you've got the food waste issue. Oh, okay, well, maybe we should be buying food so that we just definitely will eat it. And that's the better, that's the better thing. And then on top of that, you've got about a bazillion different, you know, health diets that, you know, we should be trying to follow as well.
Even if you just boil that last one down to like get maximum fruit and vegetables in your life, then that kind of is sometimes can be hard to juggle with minimizing the food waste. It is incredibly complex, isn't it? I've my cousin, who's a dear friend, is like really amazing at waste reduction, packaging reduction and stuff, but I started, well, I was vegan-ish for a while when I first started this podcast, but actually it's been a steady decline in morality. I'm sad to say, Maddie, I'm so sorry. but equally, it's come with like a more relaxed attitude to everything and that kind of like less absolutes for me. But I remember her, you know, not unreasonably being like, it's all good and well to have a completely plant-based diet, but if that's your sole aim, you do end up having, she was like, I can't find, you know, and actually now, I mean, this is 4 years ago, but now there are more options. It depends where you live and what you've got access to and what your finances are. But at the time, you know, you couldn't buy any plant-based mince or tofu or any of those things without buying like a massive plastic block round it. Like, so it is a toss-up, isn't it? You've got to sort of, and who knows, you know, because you do read conflicting things about what is the what is better or worse for the planet, and then it depends whether you're interested in carbon footprint more than you know, making an impact on how food systems are inefficient. I wondered if I could get you to like, do you, I wonder if there'd be people listening who, like, I wondered, I don't know, this maybe is patronising to people listening, but maybe not all people listening, but I wanted to ask you things like, what is a carbon footprint?
Right, okay. Yeah. So carbon footprint is to set... It's a tricky one because it's this idea that every individual person leaves a carbon mark on the planet.
Right.
And that footprint is almost like the accumulation of all of the various ways you use carbon. So your carbon footprint includes the way you travel, you know, whether you're using a car, how much you fly, but it also includes the sort of food that you eat. It could also include the size of your family. It could include the clothes that you wear.
Of course.
So actually measuring an individual's carbon footprint is really, really difficult. And I think one of the problems with this idea of a carbon footprint is that it puts a lot of guilt on the individual. And I think that actually, you know, we sort of, we need to be thinking much bigger. We need to be thinking on a much bigger scale to make the sort of changes that we need to make. But that's not to say that we can't all make, you know, make small changes and do what we can to make a difference, to try and lower that carbon footprint. I just think the idea of us all trying to, you know, calculate our carbon footprints and really worry about individual numbers could actually become a little bit, it could almost become a little bit too shaming and worrying. And I think we need to work together really on a much bigger scale to bring the planet's carbon footprint down.
It needs to be, there needs to be some international collaboration.
That would be nice.
Some nice, some nice laws on a national level. Yeah, 100%. There's little gestures, aren't there, here and there?
Yeah.
Yesterday I read that people are, there's as of, I think maybe November or now, there's going to be subsidies for people that want to get one of those new boilers that sort of, I think, uses the heat that comes up naturally under your house or something. Mm. I don't know. But there's a big
ground source heat pump.
Yeah, ground source heat pump. Yeah.
It'd be great. We have to. We do need to move away from gas boilers. And I think it's brilliant that the government are seeing that as the future. But then I go, well, if that's the case, from now on, are all new builds therefore going to come with ground source heat pumps?
Amazing.
And the answer is, I don't know. I'm honestly not sure, because it feels like if you make a new build now and you put a gas boiler in it, you're not really future-proofing the housing for the next owner. So I'm like, how much are we really committing to this?
Yeah.
But I don't know enough on the subject, but I think that's great. It's great that that's the way we're going. I guess at the moment I'm a bit like, well, how does that work?
Yeah, totally.
How are we going to commit to that?
And is there's a thing, you can see a video of you on YouTube doing a thing called the future of meat. Would you say, meatless or a less meaty future is a good idea for the future? I think arguably it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. It's because I guess the way I come at all of this sort of thing is just, I'm just professionally curious. I just ask the question, so I would never claim to be an expert. But because I do talk about, science to young children, the issues of sustainability are... And they're just really, really important. So they do sort of surround everything that I do now. And meat is one that comes up a lot. And there is absolutely no doubt that reducing your meat intake will absolutely make a huge impact on the planet and your personal carbon footprint as well. And, I said, I don't want anyone to get stressed about it, but I do think if we can reduce it as much as possible, that's great. But, that's not always possible for absolutely everybody. And, suddenly just, going vegan, by clicking your fingers, might not be the best idea for an individual either, because you don't know what their situation is, how much they enjoy cooking, how knowledgeable they are about food. Reducing meat absolutely is the way forward. Basically, reduce your meat intake, eat more plants.
That advice is coming from so many different places now. Just eat more plants. Just eat a million plants, and it's great. There's so many things that's great for. I wanted to ask, what is composting, and can anyone do it?
All right, shift things up a little bit. Composting.
Yeah. I mean, my nana had this, because why I ask is I feel like it's one of those things like that. My nana's generation. So I rudely said I had to educate my boomer parents about recycling and stuff like that, or they've had to learn on the fly, whereas I feel like their parents had a much less hedonistic view on life. Those World War II children, they all had compost bins, they all used up every bit of waste. I had an Austrian nana who, if my parents' house sat for her, before they'd even got out the front garden in the car, got out the drive, she'd be like arse in the air, head in the bin, getting out everything they've thrown away that's like a tin that still had a bean in. She'd like those war babies. I mean, it's awesome, but also she'd give you some tea with very out of date milk in and stuff. Anyway,
all right. So would my nan as well. I went over to, it was when, everything sort of like slowly opened up. At the end of COVID, not there, but you know what I mean.
I know. And what went over? Like hopefully the end of COVID at the time. Yeah.
And she had powdered milk. And I was like, wow.
Lovely.
She put powdered milk in her tea. And I thought, you are of a different generation, because she didn't know she might run out. And she got another milk out of the freezer that had sort of like curdled up. And I was like, I don't know what to go for. Do I go for the curdled freezer milk, or do I go for the powdered milk option? Anyway, but you know what? That generation, though, they knew what they were doing. Like,
they did, and they all composted. And I don't even really know what it is. It's chucking your food waste out.
Well,
but then there's a lot of rules. I live in Southeast London, and I bought a compost bin in a flat that had a little sort of shared garden, and got a lot of noise about rats, and sort of shat myself and stopped doing it, or never really committed. So I'd love to know what it is. What are the rules? Can anyone?
Can anybody compost? I guess. I think before composting, what the nanas were doing, is that they were really thinking about food waste. And I think it's all very well and good, us sort of talking about what we eat and the things that we buy to eat. But really, food waste is a massive, massive source of greenhouse gases.
Right.
It's huge. And it's something mad, like a third of all food that is edible and produced all over the world is thrown away. And is never even eaten because it will become damaged or just isn't deemed good enough to eat. And then when you think about the amount of food that actually ends up in our fridges or in our homes, and when all of that doesn't get eaten, yeah. It just all amounts to a huge amount of waste that contributes to global warming. So yeah. The good thing about composting is that if you're able to sort of deal with your food waste or your green waste stuff that comes from your garden locally, that is better. It, you know, it releases less harmful gases overall. But you can compost anywhere. The idea is if you've got a bucket and you layer up your brown waste, so that's bits of envelopes, paper, egg cartons, onion skins, garlic. If it's crunchy and kind of brown.
So literally crunchy and brown, onion skins, cardboard.
I'm trying to think, like, are there any exceptions to that rule? If it's leaves, just vegetable, crunchy leaves, good. That's
they're
brown waste.
They're good, great. That's fine. Okay. They're all over my car at the moment. I've
sweet
admitted
those
to having
up.
A car. It's but it's past the ULEZ test, it's quite new. That makes me sound like I'm a Johnny Big Potatoes. So I feel like I need to tell you, it's on a lease. I don't own it.
Oh no!
I just got my car for 3 years. Okay,
it's so hard. Oh, it's so hard. It feels like they have to like apologise for everything.
No, it's funny.
But with composting, you've got your brown waste, and then as long as you're layering it up with equal amounts of green waste, so these are vegetable scraps, peelings, your wilted kale if it never made it into your breakfast.
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
There you go. All of that sort of stuff. You just keep layering it up, give it a mix every now and again, and you don't want it to be too dry. It's got to have the right level of wet.
Oh, I like this. You'll make it sound like a lovely cake. It needs textures on different layers.
Absolutely.
And someone told me, don't put grass in. It releases.
Well, I think you don't want to put too much grass clippings in, because if you just go put in all the grass clippings, it's just not really going to create. You want a nice mixture of things. You want a balance, because the idea is that you're just going to leave it and over time it will break down and, you know, our buddies, worms and other like microorganisms, so tiny little bits of bacteria, they'll get in there, they'll start to chomp it all up and they'll help to break it down. And eventually you end up with compost that you can use in your garden.
To grow
or your house
stuff
plant.
To eat.
Yeah.
Or look at. Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. And you know what? You don't have to have a garden. You can get like kitchen composters now. You can get worm bins. Oh, I love a worm bin. You can put you can get indoor worm bins to make your own compost and compost tea if you're well into houseplants.
Oh my, please. Worm bins.
There you go.
I'm internet searching that.
Get a worm bin.
I have a food bin and I have a brown bin for garden waste.
There you go.
Are they good things to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But what you could do is if you've got your food waste and your garden waste and you're filling those bins anyway, just put all of that stuff in a compost bin instead and then just leave
and
it do its thing.
One less truck coming around to pick up a big
plastic
bin
from
your house.
And you've got some compost that's, you know, your garden's going to absolutely love in the next sort of year or so, I suppose. I think it does take a while to break down. You've got to give it time. It's a process, you know. But still,
and it does
you'll feel as smug as when you were making jam.
I so want to feel that smug again. It's been ages since I felt that smug again. That was a summer smugness that I have long missed. It's so interesting. I find it really funny. Like, I'm trying to write stand-up about it, so I probably shouldn't go into it. But it's almost an overly honest selling point for doing anything altruistic or ostensibly altruistic or like for anything that's unselfish. Mm-hmm. But it is, to me, honest, to go, you will feel really nice. Like, I do think we should just put our hands up and go, one other reason to do it, other than that it's good for the planet and it's good for others and it's good for the future of the world, is it will make you feel really nice.
Yeah, but I think it's so true.
Being kind feels really nice, and you should just admit that there is like a mildly selfish element to altruism. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think it's tricky, isn't it? Because often, you know, we saw there's like a battle between consciousness and convenience.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get yourself to the shops and you're like, oh, it would just be so much easier to pick up that packaged, you know, pre-cut carrots rather than buy the carrots. And that's a tricky one, because that's like actually that's really inconveniencing me. But there are certain mm-hmm. things that we can do that I actually think really do bring joy. And mm-hmm. I think that if you're able to compost, or if you're able to even just grow a couple of plants, yeah. a couple of, you know, veggies in the garden, some tomatoes on a windowsill, you know, it's, you're doing your bit. You're doing your yeah. bit. It's the same with, you know, with planting flowers as well. You know, you don't have to have a big garden, but if you can have a windowsill and plant some flowers, then you're doing yeah. something for the bees. And you know what? Actually, that's quite, it's quite nice. So I think where we can find the wins, I think yeah. we should grab hold of them and celebrate them, as opposed to them being yet another thing we have to do.
No, yeah, no, it's not on a to-do list. My big wins have been sturdy herbs. Like do you know what I mean? Like the really double-hard bastards that can withstand a frost, like thyme and rosemary.
Rosemary.
Yeah, rosemary. She's nails, isn't she? You wouldn't want to mess with
She's
rosemary.
She's so hard. Rosemary at the back of the garden. No one else stands a chance against her, honestly.
No. And you know, and I used to, before I'd, you know, bothered to just get one great big, like I actually got a small little rosemary from a garden shop, a couple of quid, put it in an enormous pot, and then she gets to grow into a bush. Before that, I used to occasionally take a scissors to a neighbour's front garden rosemary that protruded. If I thought, if she's dangling into the pavement, she's fair game.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, bonkers, really, where I live anyway, that anyone would consider buying rosemary in a plastic bag in a supermarket when you could just steal it if you can't be bothered to grow it. No one's going to mind.
It's the same with blackberries. Yeah. We were talking about it, but yeah. when I see how expensive blackberries are, I'm like, are you joking? Like,
any you're roadside. Selling that as if it's really bougie and it's a weed, essentially.
It's everywhere.
The roots on that guy, like, yeah it is.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is the worst looking but best tasting thing you've ever eaten?
Worst looking, best tasting.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Let me think. Probably. There are dumplings
Ooh.
That are, I've forgotten what they're called. They're very gelatinous.
Yeah.
They are sort of long tube-like shapes and Ooh. They look like, they look very flaccid on a plate and quite wet and just pale.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what they're called.
It's the tube element that's throwing me.
It's not like
pierogi.
No. So Chinese dumplings.
Oh, okay. Oh!
Not...
Like a part of a dim sum.
Yeah,
offering.
We're in dim sum land and I've forgotten what they're called. And I just think they look really... They look
like
quite
sluggy poos,
and they're sloppy. My goodness, I love those.
Yeah,
I love
they
those.
Sound I don't think I've ever had anything as part of a dim sum that I've not had a really great time eating up.
I'm into dim sum. So yeah. I would say that there is definitely some items on a dim sum menu that you look at and go, "Oh, that's interesting." Love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sometimes there's a foot or, but then very sustainable. Yeah. Do you think there's anything that demands to be eaten in a particularly ritualistic way? The classic example is like a
Bourbon biscuit.
Cream egg, I guess.
Okay.
Talk to me about how you'd
Bourbon biscuit, I would 100% take it apart, I would. Mm-hmm. Actually, I used to stay in a lot of hotel rooms, like when I was on the road filming for various TV shows. And it gets a lot, you know, every night you're in a different hotel room. You've got to find the joys, find the wins, as we were saying. So I started doing biscuit reviews on my Instagram.
Oh, yes.
And it became an absolute highlight for me to do a biscuit review every evening. So I would rate the hotel on the quality of its biscuit. They're very rare now. If you get a biscuit in a hotel room, you're very lucky.
Tell me about it.
But Bourbons, you've got to take off one of the biscuit layers, and then I would scrape half of the chocolate middle fondant layer to get a bit of that by itself. But
just
not all
half.
Of it. Yeah, because
and
I want...
And you doing it...
with my teeth.
Using the sharp upper teeth.
Absolutely. So just...
Yeah. Half off.
Can imagine
it.
Great. Because then I've had a bit
can
of that
really
by itself.
It.
But then I would actually leave the other half because I want to get a bit of biscuit and fondant combination. I don't want them all separate. I just want to be able to have all of the options.
I really understand.
You're quite passionate about wagon wheels as well. I think they need to be eaten in a certain way. If you can,
let's hear it.
Wagon wheels, I think that, again, they should be separated. Nibble around the outside of the wagon wheel.
Yeah.
Peel off the marshmallow layer on the inside.
Yes. As a almost entirely intact disc, ideally.
Oh, don't that's exciting.
Can you imagine achieving that? I feel good whenever I can get the circle, the orange jelly circle out of a Jaffa cake. If I was able to achieve an intact, untampered with marshmallow circle from the inside of
that's goals.
I'm headbutting my own microphone like a pro.
I've got so many of these. Skips.
I'm loving it.
You know a
I'm
skip?
I'm here for it. I know, of course I know a skip. I've got a podcast about eating. Imagine if I didn't know a skip.
A particular
any
fan.
Any overseas listeners, it's a sort of vaguely prawn-flavoured sort of crisp.
Shell.
It's a chip or a crisp, and it's like a shell or an umbrella, isn't it?
Mm,
it's like a little pink crisped potato, I imagine. I think puff. Yeah,
it's like a foamy texture.
Yeah,
bizarre.
Foamy texture. Quite an aerated crisp.
Yeah. I like a combination of a skip and a bit of Dairy Lee Triangle. This was like the joy of packed lunches, where I would get a Dairy Lee Triangle, which is like, you know, like a cream cheese.
Yeah.
I'd use a skip to scoop out some Dairy Lee Triangle, and then I'd put another skip on top and make a little sandwich.
An orb, almost an orb as well,
yeah.
But a half-filled orb.
Yeah.
Like a really exciting savoury Kinder Egg.
Oh, exactly.
It's amazing. Or like a kind of savoury Ferrero Rocher more, perhaps.
Oh, you've
actually,
smashed
isn't
it. Yeah.
That's what it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. It's very
all
good.
All you'd need to do is sort of find a way, maybe lick the outside and roll it in sesame seeds or something.
Yeah.
And then you've got a savoury...
That's exactly it. In fact, now I wouldn't be surprised to see this on the menu of some very fancy pants restaurant. And actually, it's just a skip and some cream cheese, but it's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you have any?
Open that restaurant.
I want to know yours.
I have loads and mine are in a constant state of flux. You're talking about Bourbons like that. Really? It gave me like big visual pangs for a boost. I haven't had a boost for a long time.
They're very good at being unwrapped.
Yes.
Oh, you do it too.
Yeah. That's really, because they're so sturdy, you can really take your time over them, can't you, without worrying that they're going to disintegrate in your hand.
It's almost like a caramel bridge holding it together, so you can take the bridge part off.
And it's such a good... It's quite firm, isn't it? And
yeah.
Especially if you fridged it for a bit, which would be one of the very few times where I'd advocate that with chocolate. Yeah, and then take it off. Oh, it's amazing. You feel like a surgeon.
Yeah.
It's as close as I'll ever get to
biscuit,
feeling like a
boost
surgeon.
Is Boost a chocolate bar? It's definitely a chocolate bar. Yeah.
It's definitely got biscuit within it.
Oh, no. We're on to that debate.
No,
a chocolate bar
can contain biscuit. That's
absolutely
100% a chocolate bar.
If you can get it from a garage, in that
it's
bit of the garage, you know the bit I mean.
I know, it's on the left by the tills.
That's chocolate. Is there? If it's there,
that's
it's
chocolate.
A chocolate bar. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Anyone who disagrees with that, if you want, I'm up for a fight. What else do I think?
You'll get Rosemary on it.
I know. Rosemary's going to ring me up. Rosemary's probably on Twitter right now, busy trolling, isn't she? That's her Tuesday morning. Oh, I'm really sorry to anyone listening called Rosemary. We don't mean you. Are there any foods or drinks, I should say, as well, that you... either hate that you think almost everyone else loves, or that you love that you know you're a bit of a wrong'un for loving because most people hate it?
That I hate. There are some foods that I just think about a little bit too much.
Yeah.
If I eat them, and therefore it's not even necessarily the taste, it's just the thought of it that puts me off. So,
oh, really?
It's not a very sort of like exciting example, I suppose.
That's okay.
But like, I'm not vegan, but I don't eat as much meat as I used to, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't like eating whole animals.
Right.
No, so sorry to talk about that whilst you're mopping up your breakfast. But yeah,
I'm
no,
mopping
so,
up kale.
So for example, whitebait. The idea of whitebait, yeah. Can't do it. Because it's mm-hmm. the whole animal in my mouth at the same time.
How funny.
So it's the idea of that sort of, no.
I blow hot and cold with that stuff, but what I think's interesting, so I've got this smelly kid and I'm trying to get him at the moment to pay a tiny bit of attention to, like, well, he's done it by himself. He's done the whole kind of like, so was that chicken an actual chicken? And you have to go, yeah, and it died. And it has to die for you to be able to eat it. And he's got his head around all of that, and he's asked to go vegetarian, or he still wants to have fish and chips Friday at school. Mm. And his school seemed to do really amazing food, actually, and they all have vegetarian Mondays. But he's asked to go vegetarian or / pescatarian at school.
Right, okay.
Go fine. And my partner's a proper vegetarian, so mm-hmm. we eat in a vegetarian way at home and never mm-hmm. cook meat or fish at home.
Yeah, same.
So that he has that. But when I go out, I'm omnivorous, mm-hmm. and he is the same, essentially. Okay. And I think as part of that is, he surprised me by enjoying whitebait.
His
dad ordered whitebait. And then again, we went out for another, and I wondered if it was a fluke because he's giddy and he liked the taste of it, but I didn't know if he'd really taken in what it was. And we did say that's a whole little fish. And he was like, all right. And then we went out again for lunch with my mum. She ordered them. And he was like, is that his eyes? And you're like, yeah, that is. And he was like, and I was like, oh, we're done for here. And he was like, great. And I'm still kind of and part of me thinks hats off for that.
Yeah.
Because as much as there is to agree with you, there is like, there's a little revulsion, isn't there? Like, there's a little, I don't know, but also I'm a hypocrite because I love an anchovy, and that's the whole thing, isn't it?
That's true.
And it couldn't taste more of what it is, that as well. It's a really intense thing, an anchovy.
Yeah.
Whereas whitebait, I'm kind of with you. It's anything that's like, oh, well, I become conscious of the texture of a bone. But then also, looking at future-proofing, maybe we are going to end up eating all crickets and all sorts of way bonier little, crunchier little guys.
Have you tried a cricket?
I have for this podcast.
Yeah.
I had a terrible time. I couldn't tell if I'd over-roasted it.
Oh, you cooked it? You actually baked it yourself?
Yeah. Oh. I followed a recipe. It was with soy and stuff. Just a very quick roasting. My guest endured them better than me. It wasn't the taste. It was just it was all spikes.
It's very like, get stuck in the back of your molars kind of thing, isn't it? I see. I don't think the future is in actual... I mean, okay, there are people all over the world who have been eating bugs for a very long time.
Yes,
so really, it's like, you know... It's not new, but I think actually, if we are going to start using more bugs in our diets, I think it will mostly be in like powdered forms, and we'll be using it as like protein powders and in baking and that kind of thing. Especially sort of like it in our parts of the world, basically. I think that's just the way that will go.
Up for that, I'd do a little gym workout, and then I'd have a little quick cricket shake.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. No, not at all. Yeah. I wouldn't mind that. Whack it in a smoothie, don't care.
Yeah. Great hair, don't care. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Fine.
Absolutely fine with that. Good, fine. Nice quick answer.
Yep. I mean, I'll put a caveat in. It depends exactly what it fell on.
I understand.
You know, I don't think I would. 5 second rule isn't a blanket statement. But we're all good. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's different. There's so many caveats. It's pets. If it's fallen on a cat's back, I'll ask questions. Right. If it's fallen, you know, somewhere I recently remember a cat having an accident, no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the underside of a shoe. I think where I'm probably the worst is still eating things I've dropped in my car where I know that's where is. Yes, but I'm not. I'm
it also depends on whether it was, whether the thing you've dropped was sticky or not.
Yeah.
Did it land butter side down? Has it now got fluff on it? Do you care about
how
the fluff?
How delicious was it in the first place? Slash, how hungry are
exactly.
you?
Exactly. But, you know, in the name of sustainability, we should eat it anyway if we can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, think of it as added texture. Sustainability aside, what's the swankiest thing you've ever eaten?
Actually, quite recently, went to a lovely restaurant in Malta, and we did a taster menu. I really do love food. Like,
so
for me, like,
exciting.
The best, like, the best sort of birthday treat or anything like that is some kind of really over-the-top extravagant meal where I get to just try loads of different things.
Yes, please. Taster menus.
I love it.
It's like... Oh, it's a bit like getting in the sea in the winter, isn't it? Just makes you feel really alive.
Oh, like it was really good. And there were some brilliant things on that dish.
I've never been to Malta. Is it good? Is it an interesting place to eat?
You know what? Very surprised, actually.
Great, okay.
I don't know if it was just the area we were staying, but we were in an area that was sort of called Spinola Bay. And it was sort of like a lot of nightlife, but also a lot of... very good restaurants.
Great.
So we had a great food time. And I wasn't expecting that from Malta at all, but it was brilliant.
Talk to me about this swanky taster menu then.
So it was, I think it was 9 courses. Started with, what did it start with? I think we started with oysters. So again, not my vibe, because we're talking
about your favourite. But did you try it anyway?
Yeah. And actually it was delicious because it had lots of sort of like yuzu and soy sauce and lime juice on it. So I really enjoy those kind of flavours. Okay. So actually it was pretty yummy.
You got through it.
Yeah. A really delicious mushroom and truffle, almost like a croquette. That was very, very tasty. What else did we have? There was the most, this was bizarre. It was tuna, red, seared tuna with almond cream.
Ooh.
So it was sort of, but it was a really interesting sort of nutty, creamy sauce on top of the tuna, which also had a sort of like quite sort of Asian sort of soy yuzu flavors again. But check this. So it was dish 3 of 9.
Yeah.
They served it with sherry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On
dish 3. Yes, please.
And I was like, sherry, at the beginning of the meal? Surely not. My goodness, that was an amazing combination. I was blown away by that.
It's a Christmas aperitif. You have it for brekkie at Christmas, don't you? Or nanas do.
And I just thought, with you know, like that early on, I always think of that as like a, like, or like a, you have that at the end of the night or on Christmas Day. So that was a really exciting combination. That actually might have been my favourite combo because it was so good, so tasty. It like, it genuinely made the food better. And I think that's cool when that happens.
It's amazing.
Trying to think, it sort of got a little bit more traditional. So towards the end, there was a chocolate fondant, and then I think there was a fish and asparagus dish, but it was amazing. It was so good.
I won't rest now until I've tried tuna with almond paste and sherry
with the soy and the yuzu flavors. Oh yeah, so tasty.
Crumbs alive. That sounds amazing.
It was really good.
I also really would love to go to Malta.
Mm.
I feel like lots of people have been to Malta for the first time because it was on a nice green list.
That's exactly why we went there.
Mm-hmm.
The greenness really helped. Actually, though, I'll be honest, we didn't spend that much time seeing Malta because we were there to do this amazing diving in Malta.
Oh, do you do scuba diving?
Yeah. It's a great,
I love it, but
great
I've not been
place
for years.
To scuba dive. They've got so many brilliant dives. And it was it wasn't really
planned.
And
also it makes you the hungriest than any other sport I've ever done. When you pop back up for some reason, I am like Yeah. The hungriest.
And always bursting for a wee. Oh, it's yes, those yeah, two yeah, things. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my yeah. goodness. So we got a, where there are a lot of dives, they had a local baker was selling Maltese almond cakes.
Ooh,
that were these huge biscuits that are probably the size of my head. Yes. And I would say they were somewhere between a biscuit and a really soft cookie, and they were just packed with almond paste. That was, they were banging after coming up from a dive. In fact, that might have been my favorite thing I ate the whole trip, because they were very tasty.
Amazing.
Yeah, so they were good. Maltese almond cakes.
Get in.
Say scrum diddly umptious.
No.
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrum diddly umptious.
Someone puts an evil mastermind inside a giant animated bao bun with like massive robot legs and arms, and it starts smashing up the whole earth. Right, everything is getting crushed to bao bun bits. It's an apocalyptic disaster. Luckily though, they've agreed to turn it back into a friendly edible giant, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, Maddie, agree to do 1900 TikTok dances without a break, all whilst reading out the Bible, but in the language of dolphin clicks, so your mouth's busy, you can't snack. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You go down in history as the woman who saved humanity from the evil bao bun. You basically saved us all from a massive wipeout. Like, this is huge. This is end of the dinosaurs stuff that was going to be, and you saved us. So your reward in the moment is a place in history for all time as an absolute mother flipping legend. Your reward in the moment, and bearing in mind you're bloody hungry because those dancers took ages and the mouth was busy with a clicking, is the feast of your dreams. Now, this is a fantasy feast. So this is the opposite of a last meal, in the sense you couldn't be happier, you couldn't be hungrier. And nothing has to be possible, let alone ethical. I couldn't give a fuck about health. I want to know, in a complete fantasy scenario, I'd love to know what you'd eat and what you'd drink. And I'd also, if there is one, you can tell me who you'd have this with, if anyone, and where, if there's a place.
Okay, all right.
Also, I should give you the caveat, as someone who I feel like is a kindred spirit in terms of love of eating, we, me and everyone listening fully understand that your answer is only your answer now, and were I to have asked you this in 10 minutes' time, you could have given a fully different answer, and that's fine. Okay.
Oh, goodness me. So I've got a feast. I've got options.
Yeah. You don't have to have loads, like, but you can have as much as you like.
Okay. So I would... definitely go. So I like bits, so I would go for probably like a tapas style meal.
Lovely.
Where I can just have lots of little bits and lots of tasters and try lots of everything. I would definitely though put something I could always eat. I could always eat ramen. Always.
Yeah.
Ramen, any combination of ramen, love that sort of thing. But I feel like that's not exciting enough for a final bao bun, you know, champion feast.
Can't go wrong with ramen.
No. And then I think, you know what? So I'm going to have ramen, and I'm definitely going to have a dim sum platter, just all sorts of different dim sum for me to nip into, try different things. And then... there's something about, okay, none of this goes together, but whatever, it's a dream. It's a dream.
I don't care.
Banquet.
No one cares.
There's something about pasta from Italy. I don't know what they do to it, but I don't know how they get it that good.
Yeah.
So I think I would definitely have some sort of delicious pasta dish, but it has to be made from someone who knows what they're doing in Italy, because it is different. I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
That would definitely
you
be
won't
there.
Catch me arguing.
And then... I would probably have as well, and I'm just giving you all my favourite foods.
I'm into
tacos.
But
has to be corn tortillas. Like, not, I don't want...
Okay, not crispy.
No. And I don't want it to be, not like a wheat wrap.
No.
Not like the ones you get here. It has to be a proper corn...
Not an old El Paso fajita wrap. No. You want a little yellow...
corn tortilla.
Almost... like hay. It almost tastes a bit like hay.
Yes. And then I want it stuffed with just really delicious things. And I do like sort of like, I'd like black beans in there. I want some sort of bean situation in there. So yes, and probably fish. So I'd say fish tacos are definitely one. Battered fish taco with some hot, you've got to have some good hot sauce on there as well.
Yeah.
Whoa. Bit of avocado maybe. Definitely some crunchy pickly bits.
So that's also
on my feast of dreams. I haven't given you any desserts, which I don't feel is fair. You got to think about desserts as well. I wouldn't want to cut us short. Have some good cheeses.
Yes.
Favourite cheese?
For me?
Yeah.
There's a French one called Bleu de Verne. It's like a soft, creamy, but really full-on blue.
Okay, we can have that, and I'll put a Comté on there, something like that. It's like quite like a hard, nutty...
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Like I'm at the moment been enjoying Manchego I never have before.
That's
good. My mum went to Spain and brought some back, and I'm having a lovely time. I'm taking my time. I'm finding it hard to pass the fridge without a tiny...
Yeah, it's just so a little delicious. Shaving. Yeah. So actually, Manchego, Comté, two of my favourites. And then desserts... Used to love desserts. I feel like I don't go for them so much anymore, a pudding. But I do like meringue-y, marshmallow-y kind of dessert. So perhaps some sort of pavlova with amazing fruit on it, I'd probably go for.
Nice. Oh, what an amazing answer. Thank you.
I gave you all the bits. Doesn't work well. I haven't thought in a very... I haven't put my chef hat on, but we don't care.
It's a fantasy situation. Yeah. There can be... someone else can join the dots. There'll be some sort of little drink or something. There'll be a shot you can do between courses that
sherry.
That resets the palate. Yeah, sherry.
Maybe.
A little tuna and sherry.
I was thinking, is it mean to have bao buns on the table? Because, you know, if we've got dim sum.
That's actually a very good shout.
But there'll be little
just
ones.
Little middle finger up, yeah.
Yeah.
To our previous oppressor.
Yeah, little fluffy clouds.
Thank you for doing this. What a brilliant guest. Thank you, my love.
I've had a great time.
Oh, good. What a disarmingly lovely, funny, engaging, brilliant guest. Make sure you're following her. She's on Instagram at Maddie Mote. It's MaddieMoate. Her stuff isn't just for kids and families, although I think lots of it's aimed in that direction. This book sounds amazing. I'm definitely going to be getting it for my kid. It's called Stuff, Eco Stories of Everyday Stuff. And it's full of did you know type facts like she was talking about there. You can get it from all the places you'd normally buy a book or on her website, maddiemote.com/book. As ever, everything I've just said there and everything interesting that we mentioned, including every single fucking confectionery that we listed there, are linked to in the podcast notes. If we mention something you went, oh, I want to know more on that, or I haven't seen that, or I've never heard of that type of biscuit, do use the podcast notes because it makes it worth me spending ages writing them up every week. Thank you for listening. Please keep telling other people about the podcast. You can support the podcast with money if you like. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and there'll be more details about that there. I quite often these days I'm writing to my patrons privately to sound them out about things. For example, they were the first to find out that I'm going to make this podcast fortnightly rather than weekly from around Christmas time when we've done 200 episodes, 4 years of Hoovering, for everybody's sanity and to preserve the quality of the podcast. But, I mean, it's not because I don't love it. In fact, it's the opposite. Make sure that I keep loving it. Follow the podcast on social media, would you? At The Hoovering Pod. Follow me, would you? At Jessica Foster Q. If you want to email me or find out where my live stand-up comedy gigs are on, or most of them anyway, you can do both those things through my website, jessicafosterq.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.